Singer selections from Paradise Lost. Jeremy Irons, Wilson Clayton. Amelia Fox, Eve. Dan Stevens, Adam. And Felicity Kendall, the narrator. A young John Milton wrote to his school friend, Charles Diodato, "Allow me to use big language with you. You ask what I'm thinking of. I am thinking of immortality. What am I doing? Growing my wings and meditating flight. But as yet, our Pegasus raises himself on very tender wings. Let us be lowly wise." This charming image, the seductive humility of the last lines, cannot disguise the towering nature of the ambition, immortality. Paradise Lost, published when Milton was 60, long choosing and beginning late, fulfilled his desire to leave something so written to after times as they should not willingly let it die. We haven't, and after times won't. The poem, over 10,000 words long, is, according to Dryden, one of the greatest, most noble and sublime poems which either this age or nation has produced. William Blake's profound reaction to the work inspired his own masterpiece, Milton, which worships the poet as a bright sandal formed immortal from precious gold. I stooped down and bound it to walk forward through eternity. Ted Hughes believed there was a direct line which could be traced from Virgil to Dante, from Dante to Milton, and continued, Hughes noted, to Eliot. John Milton was born on December the 9th, 1608, on Bread Street in Cheapside, London, to John Milton Sr., a wealthy scrivener and an excellent composer of music, whose own father, the keeper of the Forest of Shotover, a zealous papist, disinherited his son because he'd forsaken the religion of his ancestors. Disobedience in pursuit of intellectual and spiritual freedom requires courage. Milton learned early that courage comes at a cost, though in the light of his father's success, he may also have deduced it was not necessarily prohibited. Initially, he was educated at home, then at St. Paul's School, followed by Christ Church, Cambridge, where, perhaps due to his good looks, Milton had wonderful hair. He was known as Our Lady of Christ's. His honest haughtiness, his phrase, did not endear him either to his fellow students or to teachers. And according to Dr. Johnson, Milton, who may have been rusticated, was possibly one of the last students to suffer the indignity of corporal correction. Milton rejected a life in the church, feeling a clergyman must subscribe to slavery, bought and begun with servitude and forswearing, which was not his style. Dr. Johnson wrote, "Thoughts of obedience, whether canonical or civil, raised Milton's indignation. Instead, he dedicated himself to 6 years of intense study of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. Milton is perhaps literature's most erudite poet. Then embarked on a tour of Europe, where he visited Galileo, no doubt a perfect meeting of minds, though there exists no record of the conversation. In 1639, aged 31, he returned to England to what was about to become the most turbulent period in its history, the Civil War and the execution of a king. The ardent Platonist had found the cause of his life, republicanism. It would cost him dear. Starting in 1641, Milton's life and his brilliance were to be dedicated to a tireless, personally dangerous series of writings in defense of liberty, be it religious or civil. This defense would become the philosophical cornerstone of his masterpiece, should he live long enough to write it. Macaulay spoke of the deadly hatred which he bore to bigots and tyrants, and of the faith which he so sternly kept with his country. From 1641, almost 20 years passed of passionate politics, philosophy, marriages, births and deaths, during which time Milton would serve as Secretary of Foreign Tongues under Oliver Cromwell. He wrote, 2 months after the execution of Charles I, a defense of regicide. An ardent pamphleteer, he published attacks on the episcopacy, particularly Bishops Usher and Hall, under the title of Reformation in England and the Causes That Hitherto Have Hindered It, and published an attack on the government in the still stirring work Areopagitica, his great defense of freedom of expression and liberty of the press, and the only work by a poet to have legal stature in American courts. According to Professor Myron Taylor, the Bill of Rights owes more to John Milton than to John Locke. His work would be publicly burned in Europe. Private life was hardly much calmer. His first wife left him after 6 weeks of marriage, thus inspiring his pamphlet on divorce. She, possibly influenced by the pamphlet, or possibly the fact that he'd courted a young lady of great accomplishments, a certain Miss Davis. Milton married three times. Death rather than divorce, the catalyst. These marriages produced three daughters and a son who died. Though Dr. Johnson commented rather meanly that on the death of his second wife, Catherine Woodcock, who died after 15 months of marriage, aged just 30, the poet honored her memory with a poor sonnet. The poem is very lovely indeed. Milton, dreaming of his dead wife, cries out, "But oh, as to embrace me she inclined, I waked, she fled, and day brought back." There was another, more terrible darkness which would engulf him, blindness. By 1651, Milton, aged only 43, was totally blind. The most important fact about Milton for my purpose is his blindness. It would seem, indeed, to have helped him concentrate on what he could do best, wrote Eliot. Stripped of all political involvement by the Restoration, in 1660, blind and battered, arrested and released, marvel one of those who pleaded for him, Milton, forced to stand and wait, didn't. He was, according to Harold Bloom, the American critic, unsinkable. There may be no larger triumph of the visionary will in Western literature. Paradise Lost, published April 27, 1667, was followed by Paradise Regained. Milton died on November the 9th in 1674, a month before his 66th birthday. One hopes he died calm of mind, all passion spent. The last lines of his last great poem, Samson Agonistes. Well, now to Paradise Lost. It's a long poem. No man ever wished Paradise Lost were longer, according to Dr. Johnson. However, to justify the ways of God to men is no mean task. God, as we all know, moves in mysterious ways. In Paradise Lost, Milton's God, as William Empson tells us, can be mysteriously repellent. God started all the trouble in the first place. The reason why the poem is so good is that it makes God so bad. It is also the reason it is so thrilling. God, as Shelley noted, is alleged to have no moral superiority over his adversary, Satan. The sheer moral courage this required of the great Protestant poet is sublime. Milton's psychological insights into the soul of Satan, tortured by Freudian ambivalence, loving and hating God at the same time, makes Satan one of the most enduring tragic figures in all literature. Rage at rejection and displacement fuels Satan's rebellion and his destruction. God, without warning, announces to all heaven, "This day I have begot whom I declare my only son, and on this holy hill him have anointed, whom ye now behold at my right hand. Your head I him appoint, and by myself have sworn to him shall bow all knees in heaven, and shall confess him Lord. And that's an order. The penalty for disobedience? Severe. Him who disobeys will be cast out from God into utter darkness, his place ordained without redemption. Satan, previously known as Lucifer, bringer of light, fights back magnificently. He has a cause. We will be sacrificed to it for eternity. The stakes, as they say, are high. Satan works on a grander scale than Iago, to whom he is sometimes compared, bringing down all mankind rather than one brave but limited general, wrote Harold Bloom at his most succinct. Initially, Paradise Lost was planned as a drama, a stage tragedy in five acts. The title? Adam Unparadised. Why did Milton change his mind? Shakespeare, Bloom suggests, was the catalyst. Milton, who was seven when Shakespeare died, knew the eternal genius of Shakespeare's plays could never be surpassed. So he struck out in another direction, the epic poem. However, he would write it in blank verse, previously confined to the drama, rhyme being no necessary adjunct or true ornament of poem or good verse. This was arguably a decision of genius. Milton is, as Eliot noted, outside the theatre, our greatest master of freedom within form. Though Eliot feared the weight of Milton's language had a deadening effect, he also acknowledged in his essay, Milton II, that the full beauty of the line is found in its context, and that is conclusive evidence of his supreme mastery. Within the line and form of his epic masterpiece lies literature's most passionate intellectual argument for freedom of will, a passion grounded in a lifetime's courageous dedication to its cause, the triumph of the man, blind and ill, and of the poet with his peculiar power to astonish. And astonish we remain. How did Milton do it? In his head. He composed much in the morning and dictated in the day, sitting obliquely in an elbow chair with his leg thrown over the arm. Others tell of Milton, suddenly inspired, calling in the night to his daughters to secure what came. No doubt he was a difficult man, and a man in extreme difficulty. Paradise Lost, his gift to us. Milton must be read aloud, according to Douglas Bush. The opening lines we have selected from Book One are from Satan's speech as he rallies his fallen angels burning in hell. It's a hymn to courage, to independence. The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell, a hell of heaven. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. It's little wonder Blake wrote of Milton, he was a true poet and of the devil's party without knowing it. In the selection from Book Nine, Satan, now in the guise of snake in the Garden of Eden, has resolved, all good to me is lost, evil be thou my good, and plots the downfall of Adam and Eve, whom he overhears in a celestial argument about freedom. Eve wishes to be free, to wander alone in the garden, and encounters Satan, who appeals not only to her vanity, but also to something more noble, her desire for knowledge, which resides in the tree of knowledge, the only tree in the Garden of Eden forbidden to Adam and Eve, God, one might say, at his most perverse. A fearful Eve is reassured by Satan. Ye shall not die. How should ye? By the fruit? It gives you life to knowledge. Eve succumbs, and having eaten of the fruit, she muses on the power of knowledge, and in contemplating the first female lie, wonders whether she really ought to keep the knowledge and power to herself and be the superior one. On the other hand, if God's warning is true, she will die. And comes there another Eve, and indeed, Adam, wedded to another Eve, shall live with her enjoying, I extinct, a less than pleasing prospect to our first mother. Therefore, Adam too must eat of the tree. If she's doomed, he's coming with her. A rather searing insight into female psychology. She now sets out to persuade as she has been persuaded. She understands her man. For Adam, knowing immediately Eve is doomed, sacrifices himself for love. Flesh of my flesh, bone of my bone thou art, and from thy state mine shall never be parted. He eats the fruit, and is immediately inflamed by carnal desire, to which Eve with delight responds, and, as Milton tells us, with considerable erotic power, in lust they burn. Off they go, our first parents, to a shady bank in the garden, and to the inevitable. Just as inevitably, the first act of intercourse results in the first post-coital guilt, followed, alas, by the first coital blame game, and we part from this short excerpt in the midst of a male-female battle, which, like Paradise Lost, will continue for eternity. Thousands of glorious lines later, our sad banished parents are led by the hastening angel from Paradise. Some natural tears they dropped, but wiped them soon. All, it would seem, is not lost. Milton's strangely healing last lines tell us, the world was all before them, where to choose their place of rest, and Providence their guide. They, hand in hand, with wandering steps and slow, through Eden took their solitary way. The end and the beginning.
Of Adam's first disobedience and the fruit of that forbidden tree whose mortal taste brought death into the world, and all our world, the lot of Eden, till one greater man restore us and regain the blissful seat, sing, heavenly muse, that on the secret top of Oreb or of Sinai didst inspire that shepherd who first taught the chosen seed in the beginning how the heavens and earth rose out of chaos. Or if Zion Hill delight me more, and Silo's brook that flowed fast by the oracle of God, I thence invoke thy aid to my adventurous song, but with no middle flight intends to soar above the Aeonian mount, while it pursues things unattempted yet in prose or rhyme. And chiefly thou, O Spirit, that dost prefer before all temples the upright heart and pure, instruct me, for thou knowest, thou from the first wast present, and with mighty wings outspread, dove-like sat'st brooding on the vast abyss, and mad'st it pregnant. What in me is dark, illumine. What is low, raise and support. That to the heights of this great argument, I may assert eternal providence and justify the ways of God to men. Say first, for heaven hides nothing from thy view, nor the deep tract of hell. Say first, what cause moved our grandparents in that happy state, favored of heaven so highly, to fall off from their creator and transgress his will for one restraint? Lords of the world, besides, who first seduced them to that foul revenge? age, aspiring to set himself in glory above his peers, he trusted to have equaled the Most High if he opposed, and with ambitious aim against the throne and monarchy of God, raised impious war in heaven and battle proud with vain attempts. Him the almighty power hurled headlong, flaming from the ethereal sky, with hideous ruin and combustion down to bottomless perdition, there to dwell in adamantine chains and penal fire, who durst defy the omnipotent to arms. Nine times the space that measures day and night for mortal men, he with his horrid crew lay growling in the fiery gulf, confounded, though immortal. But his doom reserved him for more wrath, for now the thought both of lost happiness and lasting pain torments him. Round he throws his baleful eyes that witnessed huge affliction and dismay, mixed with obdurate pride and steadfast hate. At once, as far as angels can, he views the dismal situation waste and wild, a dungeon horrible, on all sides round, as one great furnace flame. Yet from those flames, no light, but rather darkness visible, served only to discover sights of woe, regions of sorrow, doleful shades where peace and rest can never dwell, hope never comes, but comes to all, but torture without end still urges, and the fiery deluge fed with ever-burning sulphur unconsumed. Such place eternal justice hath prepared for those rebellious. Here their prison ordained in utter darkness, and their portion set as far removed from God and light of heaven as from the centre thrice to the utmost pole. Oh, how unlike the place from whence they fell. There the companions of his fall, overwhelmed with floods and whirlwinds of tempestuous fire, he soon discerns, and weltering by his side, one next himself in power and next in crime, long after known in Palestine and named Beelzebub, to whom the arch enemy and thence in heaven called Satan, with bold words breaking the horrid silence, thus began. Devoutly is he, how fallen, how changed from him who in the happy realms of light clothed with transcendent brightness did outshine myriads so bright. If he who mutual lead, united thoughts and counsels, equal hope at hazard in the glorious enterprise, joined with me once, now misery hath joined in equal ruin. Into what pit thou seest, from what height fallen, so much the stronger proved he with his thunder. Until then, who knew the force of those dire arms? Yet, not for those, nor what the potent victor in his rage can else inflict, do I repent or change. Though change with outward luster, that fixed mind and high disdain from sense of injured merit, that with the mightiest raised me to contend, and to the fierce contention brought along innumerable force of spirits armed that durst dislike his reign and me preferring, his outward power with adversity. unconquerable will and study of revenge, immortal hate, and courage never to submit or yield. And what is else not to be overcome? That glory never shall his wrath or might exalt from me. The bow and seal for grace with suppliant knee, and deify his power, who from the terror of his arms so late doubted his empire, that were no indeed. That were an ignominy and shame beneath this dumb fall. Since by faith the strength of gods and this imperial substance cannot fail, since through experience of this great event in arms, not words, in foresight, much advance, we may with more successful hope resolve to wage by force or guile eternal war, irreconcilable to our grand foe who now triumphs, and in the excess of joy so reigning holds the tyranny of heaven. Farewell, happy fields, where joy forever dwells. Hail, horrors! Hail, infernal world! And thou, profoundest hell, receive thy new possessor. One who brings a mind not to be changed by place or time. The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell, a hell of hell. What matter where, if I still be the same, and what I should be, all but less than he who thunder made greater. Here at least we shall be free. Almighty hath not built here for his envy, will not drive us hence. Here we may reign secure, and in my choice to reign is worth ambition, though in hell, better to reign hell than serve in heaven. Ah, gentle fair, ye little think how nigh your change approaches, where all these delights will vanish and deliver ye to woe. More woe the more your taste is now of joy. Happy, but for so happy, ill secured, long to continue, and this high seat your heaven, ill fence the heaven, to keep out such a foe as now is entered. Yet no purpose foe to you, whom I could pity thus forlorn, though I unpity. League with you I seek, and mutual amity, so straight, so close, that I with you must dwell, or you with me, henceforth.
Daughter of God and man, immortal being, for such thou art from sin and plague entire. Not differing of thee do I dissuade thy absence from my sight, but to avoid the attempt itself intended by our foe. For he who tempts, though in vain, at least asperses the tempted with dishonor foul. Suppose not incorruptible of faith, not proof against temptation. Thou thyself with scorn and anger wouldst resent the offered wrong, though ineffectual foe. Misdeem not then, if such affront I labour to avert, from thee alone, which honest both at once, the enemy, though bold, will hardly dare. On daring first on me the assault shall lie. Nor thou his malice and false guile contemn. Subtle he needs must be, who could seduce angels, nor think superfluous others aid. I from the infant in thy sight more wise, more watchful, stronger, if need were of outward strength. While shame, thou looking on, shame to be overcome or overreached, would utmost vigour raise and raise unite. Why shouldst not thou like sense within thee feel when I am present, and thy child choose with me, best witness of thy virtue triumph?
If this be our condition, thus to dwell in narrow circuit, straitened by a foe subtle or violent, we not endued single with like defence wherever met, how are we happy, still in fear of harm? But harm proceeds not sin, only our foe, tempting, affronts us with his foul esteem, sticks no dishonour on our front, but turns foul on himself. Then wherefore shunned or feared by us, who rather double honour gain from his surmise proved false, find peace within, favour from heaven our witness from the event? And what is faith, love, virtue, unassayed alone, without exterior help sustained? Let us not then suspect our happy state, left so imperfect by the Maker wise, as not secure to single or combine. Where is our happiness if this be so, and Eden were no Eden thus exposed?
Oh, Lord, best are all things as the will of God ordained them. His creating hand, nothing imperfect or deficient. Of all that he created, much less man, or aught that might his happy state secure from outward force. Within himself the danger lies, yet lies within his power. Against his will he can receive no harm. But God left free the will, for what obeys reason is free, and reason he made right, but bid her well beware, and still erect, lest by some fair-appearing good surprise dictate false, and misinform the will to do what God expressly hath forbid. Not then mistrust, but tender love enjoins that I should mind thee of, and mind thou me. Firm we subsist, yet possible to swerve, since reason not impossibly may meet some specious object by the foe suborned, and fall into deception unaware, not keeping the strictest watch as she was warned. Seek not temptation then, which to avoid were better, and most likely, if from me thou sever not. Trial will come unsought. Wouldst thou approve thy constancy, approve first thy obedience. The other who can know, not seeing thee attempted, who attest? But if thou think trial unsought may find us both securer than thus warned, thou seemest, go. For thy stay, not free, obsess thee more. Go in thy native innocence. Rely on what thou hast of virtue. Summon all. For God towards thee hath done his part. Do thou.
Thus saying, from her husband's hand, her hand she soft withdrew. Oh, much deceived, much failing, hapless eve of thy presumed return. Event perverse. Thou never from that hour in paradise found'st either sweet repast or sound repose. Such ambush hid among sweet flowers and shades, waited with hellish rancor imminent to intercept thy way, or send thee back despoiled of innocence, of faith, of bliss. For now, and since first break of dawn, the fiend, mere serpent in appearance, forth has come, and on his quest, where likeliest he might find the only two of mankind, but in them the whole included race, his purposed prey. In bower and field he sought, where any tuft of grove or garden plot more pleasant lay, where tendance or plantation for delight, by fountain or by shady rivulet. He sought them both, wished his hap might find thee separate. He wished, but not with hope, of what so seed seldom chanced, when to his wish beyond his hope, Eve separate he spied.
What, whither have you led me? With what sweet compulsion thus transported to forget what ever brought me? Hate, not love, nor hope of paradise for hell. Hope here the taste of pleasure, but all pleasure to destroy. Say what is kin destroying? Other joy to me is lost. Then let me not let pass occasion which now smiles. Behold, alone, the woman, opportune to all attempts, her husband for a view all around, not nigh, whose higher intellectual more I shun, and strength, and courage haughty, and of limb heroic, though of terrestrial mould. Foe not informidable, exempt from wound I not, so much hath hell debased and pain enfeebled me, for what I was in heaven. She fair, divinely fair, fit love for God, not terrible, though terror even love, and beauty not approached by stronger hate, hate stronger under show of love well feigned. The way which to her ruin now I bend.
Into the heart of Eve his words made way.
Empress. The way is ready, not long, beyond the row of myrtles, on a flat, past by a fountain, one small bit past the blown myrrh and balm. If thou accept my conduct, I can bring you there.
Leave them. He swiftly rolled in tangles and made intricate seem straight to mischief swift. So blisters the dire snake, and into fraud led Eve, our credulous mother, to the tree of prohibition, root of all our woe, which when she saw, thus to her guide she spake.
Serpent, we might have spared our coming hither. Fruitless to me, though fruit be here to excess, the credit of whose virtue rests with me, wondrous indeed if cause of such effects. But of this tree we may not taste nor touch. God so commanded, and let that command sole daughter of his voice. The rest we live not to ourselves. Our reason is our law.
Indeed. Hath God then said that of the fruit of all these garden trees we shall not eat? Yet lords declare of all in earth and air.
Of the fruit of each tree in the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of this fair tree amidst the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat thereof, nor shall ye touch it, lest ye die.
Queen of this universe, do not believe those rigid threats of death. Ye shall not die. How should you? By the fruit. It gives you life to knowledge. By the threatener, look on me, who have touched and tasted, yet both live and life more perfect have attained than fate meant me by venturing higher than my lot. Shall that be shut to man, which to the beast? Or will God incense his ire for such a petty trespass, and not praise rather your For this fair earth I see, warmed by the sun, producing every kind. Them, nothing. If they all things, who enclose knowledge of good and evil in this tree, that whosoe'er eats thereof, forthwith attains wisdom without their leave? And wherein lies the offence that man should thus attain to know? What can your knowledge hurt him, or this tree impart against his will, if all be his? Or is it envy? And can envy dwell in heavenly breasts? Ah, these, and many more causes import your need for this fair fruit. God is humane. Reach them, and freely taste.
Here grows the cure of all, this fruit divine, fair to the eye, inviting to the taste, of virtue to make wise. What hinders then to reach and feed at once both body and mind?
So saying, a rash hand in an evil hour, forth reaching to the fruit, she plucked, she ate. Earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe that all was lost. Back to the thicket slunk the guilty serpent, and well might for Eve, intent now wholly on her taste, nought else regarded. Such delight till then, as seemed in fruit she never tasted, whether true or fancied so, through expectation high of knowledge. Not was Godhead from her thought. Greedily she engorged without restraint, and knew not eating death. Satiate at length, and heightened as with wine, jocund and boon, thus to herself she pleasingly began.
Oh, sovereign, virtuous, precious of all trees in paradise, of operation blessed to sapience, I grow mature in knowledge as the gods who all things know. Though others envy what they cannot give, for had the gift been theirs, it had not here thus grown. Experience, next to thee I owe best guide. Not following thee, I have remained in ignorance. Thou openest wisdom's way and givest access, though secrets she would have. And I perhaps am secret. Heaven is high, high and remote to see from thence distinct each thing on earth. Another care, perhaps, may have diverted from continual watch our great forbidder, safe with all his spies about him. But to Adam, in what sort shall I appear? Shall I to him make known as yet my change, and give him to partake full happiness with me? Or rather not, but keep the odds of knowledge in my power without co-partner. So to add what wants in female sex, the more to draw his love and render me more equal, and perhaps, a thing not undesirable, sometimes superior. For inferior, who is free? This may be well, but what if God had seen and death ensued? Then I shall be no more, and Adam wedded to another Eve shall live with her enjoying. Confirmed, then, I resolve, Adam shall share with me in bliss or woe. So dear I love him, that with him all deaths I could endure, without him live no life.
Adam, the while, waiting, desirous her return, had wove of choicest flowers a garland to adorn her tresses, and her rural labours crown, as reapers often wont, their harvest queen. Great joys he promised to his thoughts, and new solace in her return, so long delayed. Yet oft his heart, divine of something ill, misgave him, he the faltering measure felt, and forth to meet her went, the way she took that morn when first they parted. By the tree of knowledge he must pass, there he met her, scarce from the tree returning, in her hand a bough of fairest fruit, the downy smile new gathered and ambrosial smell diffused. To him she hastened, in her face excuse came prologue and apology to prompt, which with bland words at will she thus addressed.
Hast thou not wondered, Adam, at my stay? Thee I have missed, and thought it long, deprived thy presence, agony of love till now not felt, nor shall be twice, for nevermore mean I to try what rash untried I sought, the pain of absence from thy sight. And strange hath been the cause, and wonderful to hear. This tree is not, as we are told, a tree of danger tasted, nor to evil unknown opening the way, but of divine effect, to open eyes and make them gods who taste, and have been tasted such. The serpent wise, or not restrained as we, or not obeying, hath eaten of the fruit, and is become, not dead, as we are threatened, but thenceforth endued with human voice and human sense, reasoning to admiration, and with me persuasively hath so prevailed, that I have also tasted, and have also found the effects to correspond. Open them mine eyes, dim erst, dilated spirits, ampler heart, and growing up to Godhead, which for thee chiefly I sought. Without thee can despise. For bliss, as thou hast part to me, is bliss, tedious, unshared with thee, and odious soon. Thou therefore also that equal lot may join us, equal joy as equal love, lest thou not tasting, different degree disjoin us, and I then too late renounce deity for thee, when fate will not permit.
Thus Eve, with countenance blithe, her story told, but in her cheek distemper flushing glowed. On the other side, Adam, soon as he heard the fatal trespass done by Eve, amazed, astonished stood, and blank, while horror chill ran through his veins, and all his joints relaxed. From his slack hand, the garland wreathed for Eve, down dropped, and all the faded roses shed. Speechless he stood, and pale, till thus at length, first to himself in inward silence,
fairest of creation, last and best of all God's works, creature in whom excelled whatever can to fight or thought be found, holy, divine, good, amiable, or sweet, how art thou lost? How of a sudden lost? Defaced, deflowered, and now to death devote. Rather, how hast thou yielded to transgress, to strict forbiddance, how to violate the sacred fruit forbidden? Some cursed fraud of enemy hath beguiled thee, yet unknown, and me with thee hath ruined. For with thee, certain my resolution is to die. How can I live without thee? How forego thy sweet converse, and love so dearly joining, to live again in these wild woods forlorn? Should God create another Eve, and I another rib afford, yet loss of thee would never from my heart. No, no, I feel the link of nature draw me, flesh of my flesh, bone of my bone thou art. From my state, mine never shall be parted, bliss or woe.
So having said, as one one from sad dismay we comforted, and after thoughts disturbed, submitting to what seemed remediless. Thus, in calm mood, his words to Eve he turned.
Boldly thou hast presumed, adventurous Eve, and peril great provoked, who thus has dared. Had it been only coveting to eye that sacred fruit, sacred to abstinence, much more to taste it, under ban to touch. But past who can recall, or done undo? No God omnipotent, not fate. Yet so, perhaps thou shalt not die. Perhaps the fact is not so heinous now. Foretasted fruit, profaned first by the serpent, but him first made common and unhallowed ere one tastes. Nor yet on him find thee. He yet lives. Lives, as thou sayest, and gains to live as man, higher degree of life, inducement stronger to us, as likely tasting to attain proportional ascent, which cannot be but to be gods, or angels, demigods. Nor can I think that God, creator wise, though threatening, will in earnest so destroy us, his crying creatures, dignified so high, set over all his works, which in our fall, for us created, needs with us must fail, dependent made. So God shall uncreate, be frustrated, do, undo, and labour loose. Not well conceived of God, who, though his power creation could repeat, yet would be loath us to abolish, lest the adversary triumph and say, fickle their state, whom God most favours, who can please him long? Me first he ruined, now mankind, who will be next? Matter of scorn, not to be given the foe. However, I with thee have fixed my lot, certain to undergo, like thee, death consort with thee, death is to me as life. So forcible within my heart I feel the bond of nature draw me to my own in thee. For what thou art is mine. Our state cannot be severed. We are one, one flesh. To lose thee were to lose myself.
Oh, glorious trial of exceeding love, illustrious evidence, example high, engaging me to emulate, but short of thy perfection. How shall I attain Adam, from whose dear side I boast me sprung, and gladly of our union hear thee speak, one heart, one soul in both? Whereof good proof this day affords, declaring thee resolved, rather than death, or orphan death, more dread shall separate us, linked in love so dear, to undergo with me one gift, one crime, if any be, of tasting this fair fruit, whose virtue, for a good, still good proceeds, direct, or by occasion hath presented this happy trial of thy love, which else so eminently never had been known. Were it I thought death menaced would ensue this my attempt, I would have sustained alone the worst, and not persuade thee. Rather die deserted than oblige thee with a fact pernicious to thy peace, chiefly assured, remarkably so late, of thy so true, so faithful love unequalled. But I feel far otherwise the event, not death, but life augmented, opened eyes, new hopes, new joys, taste so divine. But what of sweet before hath touched my sense, flat seems to this, and harsh. On my experience, Adam, freely taste, and fear of death deliver to the winds.
So saying, she embraced him, and for joy tenderly wept, much one that he his love had so ennobled, as of choice to incur divine displeasure for her sake or death. In recompense, for such compliance bad, such recompense best merits, from the bough she gave him of that fair, enticing fruit with liberal hand. He scrupled not to eat against his better knowledge, not deceived, but fondly overcome with female charm. Earth trembled from her entrails as again in pangs, and nature gave a second groan. Sky lowered, and muttering thunder, some sad drops wept at completing of the mortal sin original. While Adam took no thought eating his fill, nor Eve to iterate her former trespass fear, the more to soothe him with her love society, that now, as with new wine intoxicated both, they swim in mirth, and fancy that they feel divinity within them breeding wings wherewith to scorn the earth. But that false fruit, far other operation first displayed, carnal desire inflaming, he on Eve began to cast lascivious eyes, she him as wantonly repaid. In lust they burn, till Adam thus and Eve to dalliance move.
Eve, now I see thou art exact of faith, and elegant, of sapience no small part, since to each meaning savour we apply, and palate call judicious. I the praise yield thee. So well this day thou hast prevailed. Much pleasure have we lost while we abstain from this delightful fruit, nor known till now true relish tasting. If such pleasure be in things to us forbidden, it might be wished, for this one tree had been forbidden 10. But come, farewell refresh. Now let us pray, as meet is after such delicious fare. For never did thy beauty, since the day I saw thee first, and weighed thee, adorned with all perfection, so inflame my sense with ardor to enjoy thee, fairer now than ever, bounty of this virtuous tree.
So said he, and forbore not glance or toy of amorous intent, well understood of Eve, whose eye darted contagious fire. Her hand he seized, and to a shady bank, thick overhead with verdant roof and bough, he led her nothing loath. Flowers were the couch, pansies, and violets, and asphodel, and hyacinths, earth's precious, softest lap. There they their fill of love and love's disport took large, of their mutual guilt the seal, of solace for their skin, till dewy sleep oppressed them weary with their amorous play. Soon, as the force of that fallacious fruit, that with exhilarating vapor bland, about their spirits had played, and inmost powers made earth, was now exhaled, and grosser sleep, bred of unkindly fumes, with conscious dreams encumbered, now had left them. Up they rose, as from unrest, and each the other viewing, soon found their eyes now opened, and their minds how darkened. Innocence, that is a veil that shadowed them from knowing ill, was gone. Just confidence and native righteousness and honor from about them naked left to guilty shame. He covered but his robe, uncovered more. So rose the Danite strong Herculean Samson from the harlot lap of Philistine Delilah, and waked shorn of his strength. They destitute and bare of all their virtue, silent and in face confounded long, they sat as struck and mute, till Adam, though not less than Eve abashed, at length gave utterance to these words constrained.
O Eve, in evil hour thou didst give care to that false womb. Of whomsoever talked to counterfeit man's voice, true in our fall, false in our promised rising. Since our eyes opened, we find indeed, and find we know both good and evil, good lost, and evil got, bad fruit of knowledge. If this be to know, which leaves us naked thus, of honour void, of innocence, of faith, of purity, our wanted ornaments now soiled and stained, and in our faces evident the signs of foul concupiscence, whence evil store. Even shame, the last of evils, of the first be sure then. How shall I behold the face henceforth of God or angel, erst with joy and rapture so oft beheld? Those heavenly shapes will dazzle now this earthly with their blaze, insufferably bright. Oh, might I here in solitude live savage, in some glad obscured where highest woods impenetrable to star or sunlight spread their umbrage broad and brown as evening. Cover me, ye pines, ye cedars, with innumerable boughs. Hide me where I may never see them more. But let us now, as in bad plight, devise what best may be for the present, serve to hide the parts of each from other that seem most to shame obnoxious and unseemliest seem. Some tree whose broad, smooth leaves together sewed and girded on our loins may cover round those middle parts that this newcomer shame there sit not and reproach it as unclean.
So counseled he, and both together went into the thickest wood. There soon they chose the fig tree, those leaves they gathered broad as Amazonian targe, and with what skill they had together sewed to gird their waist. Vain coverage if to hide their guilt and dreaded shame. Oh, how unlike to that first naked glory. Such of late Columbus found the American girt with feathered cincture, naked else and wild amongst the trees on isles and woody shores. Thus fenced, and as they thought, their shame in part covered, but not at rest or ease of mind, they sat them down to weep. Not only tears rained at their eyes, but high winds, worse within, began to rise. High passions, anger, hate, mistrust, suspicion, discord, and shook sore their inward state of mind. Calm region once, and full of peace now, tossed and turbulent. For understanding ruled not, and the will heard not her law, both in subjection now to sensual appetite, who from beneath usurping over sovereign reason claims superior sway. From thus distempered breast Adam estranged in look and altered style, speech intermitted, thus to Eve renewed.
Would thou hadst hearkened to my words, and stayed with me as I besought thee, when that strange desire of wandering this unhappy morn, I know not whence, possessed thee. We had then remained still happy, not as now, despoiled of all our good, shame, naked, miserable. Let none henceforth seek needless cause to approve the faith they owe. When earnestly they seek such proof, conclude, they then begin to fail.
Whom moved the touch of blame, thus Eve.
What words have passed thy lips, Adam severe? Impute'st thou that to my default, or will of wandering, as thou callest it, which who knows but might as ill have happened thou being by, or to thyself, perhaps? Hadst thou been there, or bear the attempt, thou couldst not have discerned fraud in the serpent, speaking as he spake. No ground of enmity between us known, why he should mean me ill or seek to harm. Was I to have never parted from thy side? As good have grown there still a liveless rib.
life? Is this the love? Is the recompense of mine to thee, ingrateful Eve, expressed immutable when thou wert lost? Not I, who might have lived and joyed immortal bliss, yet willingly chose rather death with thee. And am I now upbraided as the cause of thy transgressing? Not enough severe, it seems, in thy restraint. What could I more? I warned thee. I admonished thee. Foretold the danger and the lurking enemy that lay in wait. Beyond this had been force, and force upon free will had here no place. But confidence then bore thee on, secure either to meet no danger or to find matter of glorious trial. And perhaps I also erred in overmuch admiring what seemed in thee so perfect, that I thought no evil durst attempt thee. But I rue that error now, which is become my crime, and thou the accuser. Thus it shall befall him who, to worth in women overtrusting, lets her will rule. Restraint she will not brook, and left to herself, if evil thence ensue, she first his weak indulgence will accuse.
Thus they in mutual accusation spent the fruitless hours, but neither self-condemning, and of their vain contest